Yeah, I was looking at that prayer card and yeah, I didn't know if you're one of the kids there, Steve, or it's, but you just grow in beauty every day, mate. yeah, it's funny, I don't seem to get any older myself. I don't know about you, but yeah. Yeah, we're into the Christ in Culture series presently. I apologise if I don't look around this side or that side. I'll probably get sidetracked. It's a very wide church. Culture is a very interesting thing. I'm going to get a bit sidetracked here. I've got to say, the deeper I got into this sermon topic, the more it was like a cow wandering in the bush. Really exciting. I just had to try and cut it down to try and get it into a bite that we can digest. Some of this you'll know, some of it you won't. Some of it you'll disagree with me on. That's okay. I'm here to challenge you. If you walk out unchallenged, I probably haven't done a good job. And I think, what have we got up here at the moment? Probably give them the first challenge. Question. Are you the most important person in the world? We're talking on individuality today, or individualism. So part of our culture, Australian culture, is very individualistic. You've probably seen these signs up in different places. There was, a bank ad some years ago for the most important person in the world, you. And I thought, I don't know, I don't feel comfortable with that one, but I kind of do, but I kind of don't. What's going on here? And then the other one of stop acting like you're the most important person in the world. You've probably told that to your kids, haven't you, at those stages? I don't quite know if I sit there either, but there's your first challenge. If you asked the ordinary person on the streets of Melbourne today, what would they say? I haven't asked the ordinary person on the street. I have a bit of a guess what they're going to be saying, though, because we're in a very individualistic culture. I'll tell you about the two terms you're going to have to get your head around. There's two I'm going to be using a lot. Individualistic, meaning you, one. And collectivist, a collection or community, which is thinking as a group. And, the Aussie culture, yeah. Our culture, it is strange, honestly. It's been a privilege to live in PNG for 14 years because when we come back to Australia on furloughs every couple of years, you think, hey, that wasn't happening before and it's now happening. And you say to people, this is a new thing. And they say, no, we've always done that. You think, no, you didn't. coffee, yeah, when we left, coffee. Well, everybody's got a plunger. We come back, oh, we've got our plunger. Oh, nobody uses them anymore. We use pods. What? Oh, okay, we'll get a pod machine, no worries. Great, pods. We come back, a while later, oh, nobody uses them anymore. We all buy our coffee. Really? Oh, we always have. No, you haven't. and the biggest challenge, and this will challenge you guys, we come back and Australia's using American dates. And straight away you're saying, no, we don't. Okay, Google now. And you'll see we use American dates in advertising or newspapers. And this is culture is a reflex thing. So this is a little bit of a class. Hey, Luke, catch, mate. Oh, excellent. Now, can we have the slow motion again, please, on that? Perfect. What hand did you use? Why? Okay, did you think about it? You just did it, hey. Which one did I catch with? I should have probably used this one, hey, but I put this one out. What did I do? I didn't think about it. It just happened. That's culture. You respond automatically to things. And it's so ingrained in you right from a little kid. From the age of four, your core worldview is put into you. You won't be able to change that. And this is what we're struggling with. This is why I'm trying to drill in here. Any talk on culture, you probably won't get it. Just challenge yourselves on this. It's a deep thing. After 14 years in PNG, I know we're weird. I come back and I see it. Then you start to lose it after a while, after about 2 or 3 weeks, and it's, it's not as weird. But stepping out of our culture and coming back in, you can see it. So there's a challenge for you. definitions. I think we've got some definitions up there. Individualistic. Yeah, lots of big words. We're all individuals. I'm not. And it's thinking about you're more important than the group. So a decision you make, you're really going to look out for number one, because nobody else is going to look out for number one, so you've got to look out for number one. So if there's a promotion at work or whatever, you've got to be the number one. The organisation helps you get where you want to go. That's the individual, and you can read some of the things up there. What we value, independence, our rights, usually time, and being self-reliant is something we like. I pull myself up by my bootstraps. Nobody else did it for me. I did it for me. And that's individualistic. When we get to collectivist or community-based thinking, and most cultures in the world are community-based, they think very differently. And this is where us missionaries come in, and we try and solve the world for them. They say, you reckon it. You don't think like we do. We do things this way because there's a reason behind it. And collectivists, you won't tend to say, hey, you're out of line. You won't do that. You'll break relationships when you do that. You'll talk around topics and things like that. You won't be aggressive. You'll go along with the flow. Even if you think, I don't like this, but everybody wants to do it, yes, I'll vote yes. Because you want to keep the group together. Your strength and your cohesion and your name is in the group. You identify with the group. So, Joshua, who are you? Oh, I'm an Engan. I come from Engar. Yeah, but who are you? Well, straight away it's, no, I'm from a group. Luke, who are you? Oh, well, I'm an engineer. I fix buildings. He doesn't say, no, I'm a Hurstbridge person. That's individualistic. That'd be the two comparisons. I could talk all day on this. Usually, you find the guilt innocence. We are a guilt innocence based culture because I did something wrong, I pay for it, now I'm innocent. So it's about me. It's not the way community style control mechanisms are used. You got another slide? Yeah, honor shame. If you shame somebody, you've shamed them in the eyes of the group. That's why I wouldn't say, hey, you're out of line. I've just shamed you in front of the whole group. Here, we don't have shame. In fact, in PNG, an insult is to say, you don't have shame, do you? You can't even feel shame. That's a deep insult. Hey, you not got shame, you not got shame. And that, in PNG, would really hurt somebody. Here we'd say, yeah, who cares? So that's the difference in the cultures. I'll tell you a little bit. No, actually, I'll get Mauricio to tell you a little bit more about culture because his former background is a collectivist culture group. Maybe go into the countries, if that's all right, Rach. This will give you a little bit of a shock. How individualistic is Australia? Halfway, you think? We're about the middle? We're 1% behind America. We are pretty much one of the most individualistic countries in the world. We are right off the scale, one way. You probably would have pinged us as being about middle or normal, wouldn't you? Because that's what your culture tells you. This is normal. We're not normal. We are abnormal. Mexican, are they normal? They're getting a bit more normal. Yep. Down 30. I didn't have Papua New Guinea. I don't know. It's got to be that bottom end, though. And we did actually see a graph that did put it right down the bottom, but yeah, maybe the bottom, I don't know, but it's the most opposite to Australia. Can you come up, Mauricio? We'll talk a bit about Mexico, and I've got a couple of questions to ask you.
Sure.
Well, you were born and bred in Mexico?
Yes, all of us, all my kids and Erica, we were all born in Mexico, and we came to Australia 14 years ago. So when I was looking at the numbers and the rating, Mexico is 30, but Mexico is a big country. Mexico City only has 25 million people, the whole Australia in one city. So it's big. It's also border with the US, so there's a lot of influence from the US. But it's very Latin American country. So we speak Spanish as the rest of Latin America, with the exception of Brazil that speak Portuguese. But by being a Latin American country, it's very family oriented. I think they're higher because of those situations. Big country, a lot of people, it's getting a lot of influence from the US, but the real Mexican value, it's less individual, more community. Yes.
So high value on family, you were saying. Overall, most countries are moving more individualistic. As they develop, get more money, it's all about me more and more. So what you're saying is matching up. Do you do what your parents say?
Are you a good parent? For sure. Yeah, for sure. And Erica will be laughing. But family, it's super important in Mexico. Like, they're expecting you to be part of the family, not go your way, which is a challenge sometimes. But yes, definitely.
If you need something, would you feel comfortable to go to your family and ask? Or are you allowed to take something if you need it?
But I think that also family are expecting you to come. So if you don't, sometimes they get offended. Like, why you didn't call me? Why you didn't ask for help? It is very much like that. It's about your aunts, your relatives, and there's many things that will examples that will show that.
If there was an important decision, let's say they were going to appoint a new pastor at the church and you really didn't want this person, but everybody else did, what do you do?
That's a very good one. When we were in the Baptist church in Mexico, the pastor that was appointed when the previous one left was very young. He was the pastor of the youth. And he was very young, he was very good, very blessed with the Lord, but so it was a little bit difficult because people need to agree. It has to be agree, and if the majority agrees, you have to go with that. So yes, yeah.
So you have to. Could you stand up and say, no, I'm going to be different? How strong is that?
You can express yourself. They're not that close, but it will be seen like a big challenge. So the consensus on, or the agreements between the groups, it's really important. Yeah.
Religion. Let's talk a bit about religion, and then let's talk a bit about faith. Are most people religious, and how do they identify as a religion or a group?
Yeah, Mexico, if you're Mexican, you're Catholic. You have to be, right? It's like tradition. Big percentage, maybe it's changed. It is changing now quite a lot, different situations. But when we were there, 95% maybe were Catholics. And it is expected that you're Catholic. So there, people are religious, but that doesn't mean that they have a relation with God. In many cases, they are Catholics because of family, because that's what you're expected to do. People don't even go to church, but they're Catholic. However, when they have a celebration like a party, like a baptism, like a wedding, they're huge. And it's really like an excuse to have a party. Like, well, you have a kid, you have to baptize the kid, right? Because you're Catholic. So, and you need to have a party, and you need to invite the family, and it has to be big, and the food has to be a lot. So it's always like that. Other celebrations like Christmas, they're big. You have to be with family. If you have a family there, and most of people do, it is expected to go for you to go there on Christmas Eve, and it's a dinner, so it's at night. It's long, so you go there and people bring food. Everybody bring food. They are cooking all day in the morning and through late, and they make a lot more than people can eat. And next day you have to come back also for. for another meal, and so yes, celebrations and religion, it's very important in Mexico, but it's really, I mean, I can talk a lot more about it, but it's also a mix about Catholics when they came from Spain and they conquer Mexico, and then the Aztecs that were there already with their practices and the things that they do, and they kind of mix it up a little bit. So Catholic in Mexico, even that they're Roman Catholics, and the Pope, it's huge in Mexico. If the Pope goes, the whole city will stop. But it's a mix also between some other things that or traditions or things that the Aztecs were doing. In a way, it was also to make it easier for people to convert or change to Catholicism. They have a virgin that it's dark skin, so people can relate. Because if you put a white skin virgin, they're like, oh, she's not like me, right? So then you start to question yourself if that's really the plan of God, or it's only men trying to do something about it. So people are religious, but they're not individual with a relationship with the Lord, in many cases. Yeah.
So when you become a Christian, it's an individual decision at that point.
It is, and it becomes complicated with family. It becomes complicated with colleagues, with friends, because they see Christians as, so you're like a sect. I don't know what you guys do, and they brainwash you or something like that. But again, it's changing a lot. Christians are growing a lot more, and actually they realize that the ones that do weird things are not Christians. And then I guess that it's also difficult for them to understand that, well, it's an individual relationship with the Lord. Because they see it more like tradition. I mean, you're Catholic because you're Mexican.
Last question, time. Is it okay to be late?
Oh, it is expected that you're late. When you're invited to a party, you don't want to be the first one, never. So you go there late, yes. And people kind of invite you knowing that you're going to be late. So if you want to organize a party at 1, you call everybody at 12. So you know that they're going to be late. But also people stay longer. You're not expected to be told what time you have to leave. Like, that's insulting. Like, if you have a party, you tell them, oh, come at 1, and you don't tell them, oh, it's going to be over at 5, like in Australia. When we came here and the kids were invited to party, it was like only one kid, the one that knows the birthday boy, not the siblings, only one, and it's from 1 to 5. And we're like, what? Like, yeah, so again, in Australia, you're meant to, if it's 1, you show at 1, right? In Mexico, they never show at that time. And then people don't leave. And then you also, when you organize a party, you expect all the siblings to come, you expect all the parents to come, and you feed them all. So you give them food and proper meals, like a lot, and cake, and it's a big thing. But in here, it's more organized to a certain time, right?
Yeah, thank you for that. You took me back to PNG there. That was just so funny. It's so true. Yeah. And the relatives just turn up any time, and they'll stay for weeks. And you can't ask them to leave. There's no way you could ask them to leave. And time, you can't start until the important people are there. That's the event. It wouldn't be an event unless they were there. So, yeah, no, very funny. Yeah, thank you for that. And also, yeah, see how he came to Australia and it was, what, one kid? And this time, what is going on? And this is the clash of an individualistic culture and a collectivist culture. Hopefully I've sort of given you a bit of an idea. I know I've hammered it a bit, but believe me, Australians are weird. You think you're normal, you're not. The graph shows us we're not normal. And as a Christian, you're even more not normal. The problem with culture is it does matter and it is influential. There's good and bad aspects of every culture. Like I love PNG and that collectivist culture, but there's things in it that aren't good. Australia, I love Australia as well, but there's bits in that culture that are not good as well. I think the set of assumptions, and just question this all the time, what hand did I use to catch that ball with? Why did I make that decision? Why do I know it's right and he knows it's right but he's wrong? That's culture that you're dealing with. Individualistic cultures. One of the problems I see is, and these are my thoughts, marriage issues. What happens when you've got two bosses in the family? And you want it your way, and she wants it her way, and the kids want it their way, and that causes a lot of issues and divorce rates. Like I know my parents, they'll say, oh, we'll call before we arrive, and I'm thinking, but you're my parents. Like, okay, it'd be nice, but you don't have to. You are my parents, and that's an influence from PNG coming through there, saying, well, why would you stop your parents or family? They can come in any time. Anzac history, where everybody signed up for king and country and family, I don't think that had happened today. We've become more individualistic. Political correctness, where it has some positives, but some of the extremes of minorities are pushed onto everybody else because they have the right, and so the world should change. Here's one that'll upset you, I hope it does. Do I take a sickie from work because I want to and I don't care how it affects my co-workers? Well, my health's more important than the organisation, isn't it? That's an individualistic trait. Did I cut too close to the bone? Maybe. We're approaching a time where we may not be able to send Western missionaries to third world countries. And Mauricio would fit in really well with PNG. He'd turn up late and we'd all love it. And we had a Brazilian worked really well. But Westerners are very demanding. And also the jump in a very rich country to a very poor country makes it hard. But they come with all the expectations and demands that you're going to take care of them. Man, it is. I actually had a discussion with a mission leader a while ago that you may have to stop taking Westerners or take them very, very carefully. I know we're seeing selfishness comes through. We become gods. Everything's about us and pleasing us. I'd say we're like a bunch of cats in a way. The cat owns the house. Yeah, it hasn't worked out that, yeah, it's not. There is unhealthy competition between individuals and that causes stress. I think we're all racing to, you know, you just go for a drive down the road and that guy has just got to be in front of your bonnet, doesn't he? Why? Work's still going to be there when he gets there. What's the point? Let somebody in and be a bit more courteous. Those sort of things, individualistic culture, it doesn't matter. I'm first, I'm there. So we see it. When you start looking for it, you see it. We're seeing a rise of mental health issues. Are You Okay? Beyond Blue is on the rise. And I think there were some statistics I had there. That's about COVID. Yeah, I'll get onto that one in a bit actually, probably go back to the other slide, but we're seeing this rise at the moment. And I think a lot of it has to do with our individualistic culture and we're racing and we're lonely too. We've separated ourselves into silos. You can be really lonely in a crowd, really lonely in a family. That's our individualistic culture coming through there. I think we're paying for it. There's a book I read, Cheryl Turkle, she's not a Christian, but she's a psychologist, American psychologist and lecturer, and she was called into a lot of schools to deal with a lack of empathy from the kids. And nowadays, she's blaming technology a lot for the issue. And she says, you know, on Facebook, you just unlike somebody if you don't like them anymore. So in the school, you know, I don't like you anymore, don't want to be your friend, you've just unliked them face to face. But you can't do that face-to-face. It hurts people. And so we're growing up not knowing how to communicate anymore because technology has put that gap. And there's a few things that I'll read. We've swapped relationships for connections. We're losing our social skills as a community. On social media, you can unlike people. She says the solution is conversation, to put our phones down and talk. And she talks about three chair conversations, and the first one is with yourself. The phone is with you all the time. Just turn it off and sit there for a bit. Be with the Lord. Some solitude. Have a think about what you think before the television tells you what you think. Second one is with your family and your friends. Spend some time with your family and your friends. Just be with them. Have that conversation. And the third one is to spend time in community as well, socially. So she's saying the solution is down the social media, the screen time, and just talk with people. Be with people. Spend some time by yourself. We're communicating, but we're not building relationships, is what's occurring. It's a good read. As I said, non-Christian, but it's a bit of a scary read too when you look at all the phones and things we have around. I've got two on me today, so yeah. The effects of COVID, we'll go on to that one now, Rach, if that's all right. I think we've been broken with COVID. I don't think we've ever recovered fully. I think we're still on the mend, where after COVID you could go out, but I don't know if I will. Might just stay here. I think it's a bit easier, isn't it? And don't have to meet up with relatives. Well, we did Christmas by ourselves last year. Let's do that again, hey? And I think we've forgotten how to relate to each other. We paid for that. 25% increase in anxiety and depression worldwide. The suicide rate in PNG is not as high as it is in Western countries. They're a poor country with lots of challenges, but they've always got friends, they've always got family, but we can be very isolated here. And COVID, I think, yeah, just be aware, I think it really, really hurt us. So far, I haven't mentioned the Bible. And this was a hard one, because I'm usually an exegetical preacher, and this is a topical one, and it was, yeah, okay, how do I get hold of this? So I've got to chuck in scripture because I just have to. That's what I am. Unless the Bible says it, it's the gospel according to Michael. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, if you've got it, and we'll spend a bit of time in it. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. It will be up here as well, but sometimes your own version or reading it yourself makes it a difference. I read a lot of 1 Corinthians, and straight away you could tell this is a church that's divided. Divisions are a big issue with the Corinthian church. It was immature, and so Paul wrote to try and help some of these divisions. Chapter 1, verse 10, he's straight into it. I appeal to you, brothers and sisters, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all agree with one another in what you say, and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be perfectly united in mind and thought. My brothers and sisters, some from Chloe's household, have informed me that there are quarrels among you. What I mean is this. One says, I follow Paul. Another says, I follow Apollos. Another says, I follow Cephas. And still another, I follow Christ. Is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you? Were you baptized in the name of Paul? So straight away you can see this issue. There's different leaders. There's factions. They're pulled apart. They're not thinking as one body. And as you go through the chapters, it comes out time and time again. Chapter 12 is the spiritual gifts section. You've all read it. I know it off by heart pretty much, and I know you guys have read it a lot too. We're going to look at it again. There was many different passages I could have used, but I like this one. It could be possibly, like they're fighting over the spiritual gifts, saying, hey, I'm a bit better than you because I've actually got prophecy. You've just got acts of administration, like, get out of my way, I'm sort of a bit higher. And they're using these as competing tools, and that's causing divisions. These spiritual gifts is causing divisions. Tongues is probably one of the big ones that they're dealing with. Some of the translations sort of indicate that. Other people were thinking that their gift wasn't worth anything. Why should I help with this, because I really don't have much to contribute. These guys I see, they've got strong spiritual gifts and I don't. And Paul was saying, no, this is a leveler. Don't expect that some are better and some are worse. They're different. So we'll jump into verse four. I'm going to jump pieces, a little bits and pieces, because the day is shorter. We run to time, don't we, Mauricio? Yeah. verse 4, there are different kinds of gifts, but the same Spirit distributes them. There are different kinds of service, but the same Lord. There are different kinds of working, but in all of them and in everyone, it is the same God at work. Same Spirit, same Lord, same God. Trinity. Trinity is coming out there straight away in that passage. God, the Godhead is in relationship straight away. Father, Son, Holy Spirit is relationship. What does it mean to be formed in the image of God? Relationship's going to be there. He formed us for a relationship with Him. Relationship is there. We can't be individualistic people totally. It's not the form of God. It's not the image of God. The word service is more an act of service, is the way that the Greek is actually bringing that out, possibly even a deacon, but acts of service. So once again, acts of service for a body. And it shows that all the gifts are from the same source. They don't come from different areas. It is the same Spirit that indwells each one of us, the same Spirit. Verse 7, now to each one the manifestation of the Spirit is given for the common good. Okay, why are your spiritual gifts given? The purpose of your spiritual gifts is for the common good. That is why you got given them. So how can you practice that in a silo? You have to have relationship to practice the spiritual gifts. Verse 8, to one there is given through the Spirit the message of wisdom, to another a message of knowledge by means of the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another gifts of healing by that one Spirit, to another miraculous powers, to another prophecy, to another distinguishing between spirits, to another speaking in different kinds of tongues, big breath, and still another the interpretation of tongues. All these are the work of one and the same Spirit, and He distributes them each one as He determines. The basic point is there's a variety of spiritual gifts, and they're there to meet the need of the Christian community. That's why we have the different gifts. It's not a definitive list, it's just an idea. Here are some different gifts. So out of that, we say, okay, well, that's what a spiritual gift is, but that's not a closed list. The Lord gives many different gifts. What gift do you have when the Lord came and indwelt you? And the Spirit gives gifts. What gift did He give you? Well, there's a challenge for you. I see the muses, that's pretty clear. And which one do you want? Which spiritual gift do you want out of that list? Which one would you go for and say, this is the one? I think tongues would be pretty cool. I don't speak in tongues, but I'd love to. And then I think, why? Well, it's probably for me, isn't it? It's probably not going to benefit anybody else. It's for the common good of the group. Well, I don't know. I don't suppose we really pick the gifts. You get what you're given to use. And if you sneak ahead to the end of the chapter, you might see verse 31, but eagerly desire the greater gifts. And it goes into the passage of love. Yeah, but what gift do you think you have? And somebody sitting here will probably be thinking, oh, I don't have anything. No, you will. There will be. I remember a guy at Bible college, I shouldn't say this, but I thought, oh, what use is this guy? And I'm embarrassed to even say it. Like, I'm being really open here. And I just, And then one day I saw him worship lead. Oh, man, the guy came on fire. It was incredible. There's no way I could worship Lee like he could. Never say you don't have a gift. There is gifts there. Apologies, that's my confessional for the day. I've probably got a few more, actually. verse 12. Just as a body, though one has many parts, but all its parts form one body, so it is with Christ. For we're all baptized by one Spirit, so as to form one body, whether Jews or Gentiles, slaves or free, and we're all given one Spirit to drink. Even so, the body is not made up of one part, but of many. If you counted how many times the word one comes up, you get the emphasis of what he's trying to say. It's pretty self-explanatory. He's using the body as an analogy for the church. And it fits pretty well because I've never seen a body with 20 hands stuck on it. And you need all the different gifts to come together to work well. Notice how it doesn't say bodies. You are the bodies of Christ. You are the body, singular, of Christ. You are the bride of Christ. He didn't have many wives. You are the bride of Christ. Another challenge for you today. I'm not going to miss a challenge. Unity is one body and one spirit is being repeated. What does it mean with one body, one bride? Isn't it? And I'll be skating on thin ice here. I thought Hurstbridge Vine was the only body of Christ in the world. Is that right? Or you get my point, sarcasm. But how do you sit with that? And I'm not saying that all roads lead to Rome. They do not. But there is a body of believers that sometimes we might say you're not a believer, and that's not really for us to judge. But there's a challenge for you, the body, the one body. Verse 27, I'm jumping 15 to 26, basically. The first bit he says, to you people who think you don't have anything to give, you do, your gifts are valuable. The second bit he's saying, guys that think you're fantastic, look, it's just normal. He's just levelling up those who thought they had nothing, those who thought they had everything. Obviously, it's a point Paul wants to drum home. 27, now you are the body of Christ and each one of you is a part of it. This is addressed to the local church at Corinth. Each local church is the body of Christ, just as the universal church is Christ's body. And then he goes on, now eagerly desire the greater gifts. And we think, oh, wow, okay, what's the greater gifts? And yet I will show you the most excellent way. And you get this fantastic chapter of love that comes through, and it puts everything in perspective. All of a sudden, oh, let's not even argue about who took up the offering last week, and you know, love is it. Love is not a spiritual gift. Love is a fruit of the Spirit. The Spirit comes and indwells you. It's a fruit of the Spirit. It's not a spiritual gift. How does that sit with you? Because if the Spirit's with you, God is love, the Spirit is in you. If you look across at Galatians 5:22, the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience. Well, the Spirit's with you, there's going to be fruit of the Spirit with you. So we all should have that, shouldn't we, as fruit of the Spirit. Now, love, this big chapter on love, pretty hard to love by yourself, isn't it? You try and get in a room by yourself and love yourself. It's kind of hard. You kind of have to be together. The church I heard described as a bunch of porcupines who huddle together in the dark to keep warm, and as they come together, they hurt each other, so they move apart again. That's kind of it. It's not easy doing relationship. It can be very difficult doing relationship. But, yeah, that is what we're called to. So there's the vertical component, and quite often we focus on that, us and God, especially in spiritual formation. It's, you know, we think it's us and God, but we're also made to have a relationship with those around us as well. The vertical and horizontal. Matthew 22, 36 to 40. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it, love your neighbour as yourself. All the law and prophets hang on these two commandments, love God and love people. Can you do this? I'm still working on it. To be honest, it's hard, isn't it? But we have to. That's the greatest commandment, you know, love God, love people. Why did I choose today's passage? I don't know. There were so many. It just, I struggled. John 15, the vine, we're all part of the vine. We can do nothing unless we abide in the vine. You got the early church in Acts chapter 2. Everybody, all the believers together, sold everything, had everything in common, gave to anybody who had need. Every day they met in the temple courts, broke bread in their homes, ate together with sincere hearts. Like, that would have been a great passage. 1 Peter 2, we're all living stones being built into one holy house. Great analogy again. 1 Thessalonians 5:11, therefore encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. 1 Corinthians 14:26 came out in the Vine newsletter a few weeks ago. When you come together, not if you come together, when, you're going to do it, it's assuming you will, each one has a hymn, lesson, a revelation, a tongue or an interpretation. So everybody, each one has something to give. Let it all things be done for building up the church. Great passage. I was going to use that, but it had already been used. I thought, okay, there's many others. So you get the point. It's not one passage, and it's dangerous to do your theology off one word or one passage in the Bible. This is a strong theme coming through the Bible. You can go to many other places and find the same thing. Spiritual formation, I've done a bit of reading on that recently, and it is a good thing. I see there's a group meeting this afternoon in our house. Basically, it's a discipleship course. It's a great thing to do. A definition of spiritual formation, and they all sort of have the same aspects, but here's a simple one. Spiritual formation is a process of being formed in the image of Christ for the sake of others. And it's that last bit, for the sake of others. I read that and I thought, he just tacked that on. But after I kept on reading and studying it, no, you are being formed in the image of Christ for other people. We have to be together. You are not complete. You are not fully human unless you have relationship with other people. It's a part of who we are. In our individualized culture, it can seem very strange to add that for the sake of others onto the definition. We're quite happy up until that last bit. We'd like to just rub that last piece off because we are off the scale with individuality. But we have to be together. Now, I know already the extroverts here say, yee-hoo, bring this on, Michael, preach it, brother. And the introverts are saying, just let me disappear under a chair somewhere. I challenge you, though, there's even the introverts, we have to, and I would put myself in that category, we have to embrace various aspects. Doesn't mean we can't do things, it might take a bit more energy, but you lose a valuable aspect of your spirituality when you don't. Push yourself in areas that you're not typically comfortable with, and we do have to be in community. D.L. Moody was an evangelist, a U.S. evangelist back in the 1800s, founder of the Moody Bible Institute, and he was visiting a prominent Chicago citizen one cold evening, and they had the open fire going, and Chicago, we live there, it got up to minus 10 most days and down to minus 16 on the normal days. Then they had their cold snaps. I thought I knew what a frosty morning was in Hurstbridge. You know. and he's sitting there and this citizen saying, I don't have to go to church. I challenge you, I can be just as good a believer and Christian outside the church as I can inside the church. And Moody got some tongs and hot coal and he just moved it to the side. And they watched it and it fizzled and went dark. And his response was, I see. And that was the end of the conversation. The point was made. You can for a while, but you won't thrive by yourself. It's not the design. So by now you're thinking, okay, Michael's just told us individualism's bad, collectivism is right, we've got it all wrong. I wish it was that simple, you know. And this is where the twist came in. I'm putting this together and I'm thinking, and the answer is no. Neither extreme is good. Collectivism can end in genocide in the name of killing some people for the greater good of the whole community. It can end in that. Individualism, you've seen it at its extreme as well, very selfish, dangerous as well. I generally believe that, I know that the biblical culture was collectivist. Godly culture, I'll try and separate the two, it does seem to be predominantly collectivist, but it's not purely. There is individuality in the Bible. There is space for the individual. You are important. If we go back to our reading today, in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, it's about individuals. All these individuals have equal gifts. They're all important. Your individual worth, your individual gift is valued. You are valued as an individual. You've got Jesus' parables. The lost sheep. You leave the 99, you go running for this one and try and hunt down this one. That's an individualistic thing to do. The lady who sweeps her house looking for the lost coin. there's many parables like that, showing that the individual is very valuable to the Lord, and your faith as well actually comes down to an individual belief. In PNG, in a tribe, they'll get to a point where the big man says, oh, okay, we're going to be Christian. We're all Christian, right? Done. Finished. And we think, hang on, as individuals, that doesn't fit right. It does take a while for individuals then to catch up with that decision. But in a community, you make that decision, and that's what it is. Godly culture is what I'm heading for. Individualism puts the focus on what's best for me, regardless of how it affects the group. Collectivism puts the focus on what's best for the group, regardless of how it affects the individual. From a biblical perspective, neither of these are fully correct. Ultimately, God wants humans for his sake, not for their own purpose. When we think about what we do, is it for God's glory? Is it for his kingdom? And that is who we should be pleasing, not ourselves, not the group, but actually a godly culture. I'd propose a third way. That's why I see aspects of both in a godly culture. If you feel out of sorts with the world around, great, I do too. John 17, 14 to 16, I have given them your word and the world hated them, for they are not of the world any more than I am of the world. My prayer is not that you take them out of the world, but that you protect them from the evil one. They are not of the world, even as I am not of it. I'm feeling more and more this every day with what's going on. You think this is not right. What's going on? I don't feel comfortable in any place anymore. I see that God is asking us to live a different life. There is a third way. One of my favourite passages, Romans 12, verse 2. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing and perfect will. Don't be conformed anymore to the pattern of this world, is what it's saying. You've got a lot of things coming up. There's around us, we've got elections coming up. How are you going to vote next week? For your benefit or for the group's benefit? Are you going to vote for somebody that you think, I don't like what they'll do to me, but actually that'll be a really good thing for the community? You are now thinking collectivist. How are we going to protect our family from the effects of individualism? We've just heard about social media and screens that are interfering and breaking relationships. Christmas time. This is a good one, isn't it? If an argument's going to come out, it's going to be Christmas time. But we had Christmas at your place last year, but it's our turn this year. And do you then make a decision saying, look, I know we really needed it at our place, but for the sake of the group and the kids, let's go with the group decision because it's going to be better for the group than the individual. You've got challenges coming up. How are you going to apply all these individualistic things that are in our culture? And before now, you probably thought, I hadn't thought about it that way. It's because we're weird. We just need to understand that. Get over it. We all have our issues, but we are very individualistic. How are we going to carry each other's burdens in the community? When one person hurts, we all hurt. What if the worship team needs help? Ollie's away for a weekend, or do we step up? And you think, but I had that weekend planned to go away. Yes, but for the sake of the group and the community, maybe I should be making a different decision. There's many ways to apply these ideas today, and I'll leave it with you to work it out. But you get an idea. A passage I'll leave you with, Hebrews 10, 24, 25, and let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. That's a good summary of where we should be, hey? Thanks, Steve. I'll hand it back to you. To the world.